and thank you for tuning in to Luminate, Navigating the Unknown Through Creative Leadership. I'm Sarah Hempstead, AIA Lead AP Principal in Charge and CEO of Schmidt Associates. In 1991, an Indiana Humanities Council task force addressed Indiana's position in a changing world. The task force report, titled Indiana in a Changing World, A Strategy for Action, emphasized the need for Indiana to participate in the world, community, and world economy, to attract companies and specialist employees, and to make Indiana students more internationally competitive. One of the report's major recommendations led to the creation of the International School of Indiana in 1994. By July 2002, ISI was authorized to enroll juniors and seniors into the International Baccalaureate Program, officially making the institution an IB school. And by 2004, ISI saw its first graduating class consisting of 8 students. 4 years later, IB primary and middle years programs began to be incorporated into the curriculum in grades 1-5 and 6-10. ISI also received certification for both programs in 2011, giving them the honor as the only school in the Midwestern United States to offer IB, MYP, and PYP to its students. Additionally, ISI announced the launch of its Mandarin Immersion Program for students. By 2019, ISI launched the One ISI campaign with the intent to unify the lower and upper school campuses by the 2021-2022 academic year. And last August, the Chin Family Lower School was opened. And here to talk to me about the International School of Indiana, ISI, and so much more is my special guest and friend, Liz Head, Elizabeth, who serves as the head of school. Liz, thanks so much for joining.
Happy to be here.
I wanted to start with what led you as the third head of school in 2019 by going all the way back to what you loved about school when you were growing up. What led you to education in the first place?
I'm one of those people who, as a child, just loved school. I realize that's not true for everyone, but it was something that was very true for me. I was the kid who would sit in the house and play school with all of the neighborhood friends. Sometimes I was the teacher and sometimes I was the student, but I loved all of it. I also had a father and a mother who both loved education, spoke multiple languages, and loved just being in a learning environment. And so that was part of the fun of being in our family. I had a father who was a salesman and a mother who was a business owner. And so they taught me a lot about the work ethic and importance of work ethic and how school was such an important piece of my development. So that's how it all started.
So when you started your school, were you full immersion school, just like international school?
No, not at all, actually. I was a public school kid most of my childhood. I did attend private school for a couple of years of high school, but actually just learned Spanish as a regular high schooler taking one Spanish class, and then eventually became passionate about language learning as well. Moved abroad, lived abroad for 20 years because of my interest in languages. But no full immersion for me as a child.
So how did you get to founding a school? Before ISI, you founded, right? Co-founded the Lighthouse International School. Tell me that story. How did that happen?
That was one of those amazing leadership luck moments. And I say luck because in a lot of the reading I do about leadership, one of those non-tangible components of leadership is luck. Mm-hmm. Being in the right place at the right time and someone seeing potential in me that I didn't even see in myself. Mm-hmm. So I had been in Costa Rica. I had been in an international school teaching and doing some leadership, actually as a college counselor in international school there. And I had a friend of mine who walked up to me and said, did you realize that on the west side of San Jose, there is no international character values based school and we need one? And I said, oh, great. Well, you should go talk to some people and do that. And she said, no, like you would do this so well. And she saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself. Long story short, she said that she was driving down the street and saw a building that had been abandoned and that was had a for rent sign on the front and that could we drive by and look at it because it could be a possible school. We walked in and I'm not kidding. It was full of chickens and logs of wood for someone building a house down the street. My friend, as we're walking through, starts telling me all of the visions she sees of how this could be restored into a school. And the person taking us on the tour randomly says, oh, that's so funny. You're talking about a school. Just a week ago, I met a group of people coming through our same building, interested in establishing a values-based character international school here a week ago. And we both, our jaws dropped.
Sure.
So long story short, I pick up the phone. I call one of the people that he mentions was interested in this building. And they said, oh my gosh, we have all of the money. We're ready to invest. We just need somebody to lead it. Let's meet. And within 2 weeks, we were all working together to launch a new school. And 3 months after that first meeting, I resigned from the job I was at, worked full time for 8 months. And we opened the school full with waiting lists in every grade, age 3 through grade 5, that following August. It was amazing. And I just happened to be in the right place with somebody who saw potential in me that I didn't even see myself.
Well, and the willingness to say yes and jump into that potential too, right? Mm. I mean, preparation sort of met opportunity and then you said yes.
And I did say yes. It was a leap of faith for sure.
So how long did you stay there?
So I was there for almost 6 years. I actually decided to resign when I had my second child. I had decided that I needed to be a stay-at-home mom, that was going to be important for me. And I really had always admired and wanted to be a great stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. So I tried, and I still admire those stay-at-home moms who do it so well. And I realized quickly within 6 months that although I love my children more than anything in this world, I'm a better mother when I'm also excited professionally about what I'm doing. So within 6 months, I was actually offered a job in a leadership position in another international school and started there.
That is also how I ended up back at work. I realized I would be much better at being a mom if I wasn't doing that all day, every day.
And it's so true because I love what I do professionally. And because I get so energized from it, I actually have much more enthusiasm, energy as a mother. And I like myself as a mother a lot more because of what I do professionally.
That's right. That's right. So when you went back to work, was that back in Costa Rica?
So the full last 20 years have all been in Costa Rica before coming to Indiana. And then when I went back to work, I was actually a vice principal part-time for a year or two. And the head of school approached me in the first year and said that she had asked me to do the vice principal job because she knew she would retire in a year. Okay. And would I be willing to consider the head of school position there? So I became the head of school of this other international school before the move to Indiana.
Well, let's talk about moving from Costa Rica to Indiana, because that is not everyone's natural life progression is that move. So what was it about this particular school or this particular place that made that an attractive opportunity?
You know, Indiana should be really proud as a state. I have no connection to Indiana. I was raised in Colorado, spent those 20 years in Costa Rica, and had no interest in moving to the Midwest or to Indiana. Honestly, I didn't know much about Indiana, didn't feel highly attracted to the state of Indiana. So I didn't have any pull.
Sure.
It was actually just a random educational consultant who I admire greatly who picked up the phone and said, Liz, you've got to check out this school. Because if you're ever thinking of moving back to the US and you want your children to be in an international school, you have fewer than 10 fully international school options in the entire United States. And here's one looking for a head of school. I wasn't looking for a job. I had a wonderful, the position I was in at this international school was a wonderful job. I had a wonderful board of directors to support me. So I wasn't even looking, didn't even have my resume ready to go. And he said, this consultant, just check out this school and you're going to be so impressed. And I said, Indiana, really? His name was John. And John had been to the school I was at in Costa Rica. I said, John, you know what I have here and what a great job I have. Why would I ever want to do this? And he said, you just need to check it out. Mm-hmm. So I literally flew within a month to check out ISI. And I walked through as really an interested parent more than anything, because I didn't need to move. I didn't need a job. I didn't need to make the change. And I thought, well, let's just look at this as a parent. I hope one day everyone listening to this just walks through the hallways of the International School of Indiana just to see what's happening in the state of Indiana, because there are very few places in all of the United States that do what ISI does. And it's exceptionally special and unique. And the product of what it produces of the students going out into the world, 1% of high school graduates a year have even close to what our graduates have in terms of the skill set, the attributes, the assets that they take with them. It's exceptionally special that Indiana has a school like this. And so long story short, as I walked through the hallways, I realized I want my children to be part of this. And we moved here.
So when you were introduced, you were the first female head of school. You're only the third head of school. It's a pretty young program, really, here at the International School. You were part of a special Indiana Destination Development Corporation campaign called Hoosiers by Choice. And I can hear why in the pride of place, right? Mm. And so your children have found a home here, too, right? Mm. Talk about raising kids here and what the International School can bring to them in the sense of a global perspective and opportunities.
You know, my children are blonde hair, blue eyed Costa Ricans who spoke Spanish before they spoke English.
Sure.
And yet you would look at them and you'd think they're just any kid from the US, but they're not. They have a multicultural family. They speak various languages and their childhood was raised around people from all over the world because they attended international schools before moving to the US. Mm-hmm. So when I brought my children here to Indiana and people would say, you're taking your kids, these blonde hair, blue eyed, Spanish speaking Costa Ricans to Indiana. Really? Like, how are they going to feel? What's that going to be like for them? What's the cultural process going to be like? Well, the fact that the international school exists here, my children enter into a full language Spanish immersion program with native speaking teachers from Latin American countries all over the world that have the cultural expressions and attitudes of Latin Americans from all over the world. And my children walk into their first day of school. And of course, the nervous mother, as they walk out, how was your day? And they looked at me like, what's the big deal, Mom? This feels just like where we were before, because they hug me, they kiss me like Latin Americans do. They speak to me in Spanish. They like my Costa Rican accent. I have a lot of friends. They're from all over the world. That's what I'm used to. It was great. Like, no big deal. Like, this is normal school. And I love it because that is my children's reality every day. Every day they go to school and think it's normal to interact with people from all over the world in multiple languages with teachers who have perspectives from all over the world. And they're constantly thinking about problem solving, critical thinking about complex topics, about random countries around the world, because for them, that's just normal life. And I love that. And I look forward to what they're going to do for the world because of what they've done for so many years during their educational process.
That's awesome. So their first day of school went really well. Let's talk about your first day of school. So you show up and the task is, we've been talking for 20 years about one ISI, one campus. You're the woman to get it done. Go. How'd that first day of school go?
Yeah. I'll be honest. You know, as leaders, and I'm looking at you, Sarah, because I trust you experience the same. People look at us for strength and confidence to know exactly what we're doing and to walk in and do what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And underneath that, there's some concern of, you know, can I really pull this off? Because I was actually at for-profit schools in Costa Rica. So most private schools in other countries, or many of them, are for-profit. So I'm not out fundraising. Even though I had been head of school of two other schools, I had never done fundraising. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if I'd be good at it. I didn't even know how to really do it strategically. And I didn't know a single person in Indiana to even think of how I would network and make connections to ask people for millions of dollars to build a building that the school had been trying to build for 12 years and had really struggled to achieve. Mm-hmm. And yet I was told my number one priority was come in, raise this money and build this building, a serious challenge. And yes, I felt considerable amounts of fear, and yet we did it.
So how'd you start when you came with no names in your black book? How did you start establishing those connections, that trust?
You know, when I mentioned that my dad was a salesman and my mom was a business owner, when I think of the two of them, what I most learned was work ethic and how to build relationships. Because as a business owner, you have to have grit and resilience to work hard and to be diligent and persistent in a dream and a goal. And as a salesperson, you have to know how to work well with people because it's the only way to move forward in sales. I realized day one when I arrived to Indiana that the only way this would work was just to dig deep into relationships, build relationships, be as authentic and transparent as I could be as human as I could be, as relatable as possible, and reach out to people to connect. Mm-hmm. And what I heard, which is so true, is that Hoosiers are open and willing to engage in relationship and to get to know people. And they've been wonderful to connect with. So I just started with my closest staff members that were welcoming me to the team, who connected me with community partners, who connected me with open doors around the state. And it went from there.
So you got the building built, built long-term relationships, got the building built. How do you think about strategy for ensuring that those donors and friends stay part of the community long-term?
Relationships. In the end, it all comes back to people trusting what we do because they're connected to what we do. So the mission, the vision, the essence is so powerful of what ISI offers. No other school in the Midwest offers it. But how do we keep that mission, vision, essence alive for donors, for community partners, so that not only do they see that this worked, but that we can continue to build on ISI to the future? And it's all about staying connected in relationships. I think sometimes one of the challenges I face is that our schedules can become so full of tasks that I have to make sure to constantly prioritize just connecting with people, because that's what people give to and that's what people believe in, is connection.
Well, one of the things that I've seen you do, and the school as well, but certainly through your leadership, is a focus on carving out time for listening. Talk to me a little bit about that. What was your strategy for engagement? And I know that's hard to do. You had 100 meetings.
One of the most powerful components, I believe, of leadership is humility. It's being humble enough to look people in the eyes and say, I want to understand well, and I'm going to listen as much as I possibly can listen, because you have something that I need to learn about. So when I arrived actually in Indiana 4 years ago, I went on a 6-month listening tour, hundreds of hours spent on just listening to all of the community partners, parents, students, staff, related to our community. And we actually built our entire strategic plan from all of those listening sessions that we did in individual people's homes. It was amazingly powerful. And then in the last year, we went through another 3-month listening tour. I think we had over 80 meetings, had over 500 comments specifically related to community, to building culture. And once again, we actually revised our strategic plan, modified it, added an additional pillar, all from listening to what people have to say and knowing how important it is what people have to offer. Listening is extremely powerful, especially when people see action steps stem from that listening.
When they see that there's a result. Mm-hmm. So someone heard and is there's a result. Let's pivot a little bit to learning styles. As we work with clients, we've seen the impact of COVID on the last 2 years, and some it has been detrimental across the board. And it has really required that educators double down on being connected to their students wherever they're at, and adjusting how education is delivered to get people engaged and minds open as quickly as possible. How do you see the international school changing or maybe doubling down on the way that we get students engaged with the material that we're trying to teach them?
You know, COVID really created an educational experiment across the world. We saw some students flourish in a remote environment. We saw some students connect better to content, to material, when they were remote. I would say, though, that probably 95% of students did not flourish in that environment, especially when we do full language immersion with people trying to learn a language across a computer screen. Mm-hmm. So what we learned more than anything was that because of our model, we have to double down on in-person relational connections, because learning happens best, especially in multiple languages, when you connect in person with people.
Right, right. Now that we're all back in person, school is full. What's the next big goal?
That's what's exciting. That's the really fun part. So we are back. We're back in person, and we are fully unified for the first time in 28 years history of ISI. We're unified on one campus. We have all of our families, students, parents, staff, all together, all interacting. And there's so much possibility and opportunity there. So that's a really exciting time for ISI. What's next? We've actually already started planning out the next campaign, which will take us into the next 5 to 10 years of planning, because not only have we now been unified on campus, but we need to protect that campus. We need to think carefully about building a long-term legacy for the school, not just the short-term needs of getting everyone together. So we've been looking at some very strategic priorities related to long-term financial stability for the school, preserving and taking good care of our campus, and then also really focusing now on upper school, because lower school had a lot of attention given because of the new building, focusing on upper school and the needs of upper school students, especially in athletics, performing arts, so that they also can see the benefits provided to them. So we're looking at a variety of projects that will be coming over these next few years.
So let's pivot then to what's next for you as you grow as a leader. How do you continue to find the nourishment for those skill sets that you need?
I am a big believer in the fact that I have to be healthy emotionally, socially, psychologically, spiritually, to be able to help and serve everyone that I work with every day. So intentionally, through all of the years that I've been in leadership, and even before then, but in all of the years I've been in leadership, I've been very intentional about making sure to surround myself with a few key people that are much wiser and much more insightful than I. So if that's a coach, if that's a counselor, if that's a wise mentor, if that's a community partner that I've realized just knows so much about what I want to understand, mm-hmm. I right now can think of now and 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and 15 years ago, through all of the leadership I've done, I can think of those key people who I lean into, meet with regularly, invest time in, to really look at myself, reflect on my strengths and my weaknesses, because I want to be aware of who I am so that I can offer my best to everyone around me.
So if you were the mentor for yourself 20 years ago, what would you have told you then? What do you wish you knew?
I wish I would have given myself more grace. I am passionate about what I do, and I always want to do it well. And of course, that's a strength, of course. But that also can be really challenging when there isn't a lot of grace mixed in with it. And so I think back to myself as a child in school and how much I wanted to excel in school and then in college and then professionally. And I've always had a lot of pressure on myself to excel because I love to do that. But I wish and I hope others younger than I would just remember to have grace. It's just okay to be where I'm at and to be okay with that and to enjoy right where I'm at. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
That is great advice. All right, I'm going to ask you two final questions. One is I ask everybody and one's just for you. So the just for you, where is the next trip? Where's your next dream trip? The world is your oyster. Everything's opened up. Where are you going?
I'm actually going back, and I don't have it planned, but I hope to soon. I'm going back to just a place that I've loved, and I've been there before, so it's not a new one. I went to a hostel with a close friend in college, the very top of the Swiss Alps, called Gimmewald in Switzerland. And it is just this tiny little town that you can barely get to except climbing a mountain or taking a gondola. And you stay up there with a bunch of mountaineer type and look at these amazing mountains in silence and just enjoy the peace of beauty. I'm going back to Gimmewald, Switzerland.
That's awesome. You're not taking the three children.
Not taking. That's not a sit down, peaceful look with three children. No.
Fair enough. All right. And then my last question that I ask everybody, we need a book recommendation. What are you reading now that you love or that you have read in the recent past?
You know, I'm actually going to give you an oldie but goodie. I frequently read about leadership because I love this type of topic. And so this is an interesting one, but I don't know if you've read the 5 love languages, and you probably have heard a lot about them. I have read that through the lens of how to apply that in the workplace. I think one of my biggest responsibilities is to work very closely with my leadership team and with other leaders in the institution, and to study them personally, to know what makes them click, what motivates them, what excites them, and what makes them feel valued and understood. Mm-hmm. Because my job is to adjust my communication style, my work style to each one of them, not for them to adjust to me.
Sure.
So when I think of a book that I continue to go back to, sure, 5 love languages has to do with relationships or marriages. Well, but it also has to do with how can I care well mm-hmm. about the people that I work with, so that they know that they're cared for and supported by me.
Back to communication, right? Mm. Communicating in a way that people can hear.
Absolutely.
Or listening.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. I always enjoy our conversation. I look forward to the next step at the International School to learn more about Liz, ISI, and their curricular approach. Visit www.isind.org. This has been Luminate, navigating the unknown through creative leadership. Thank you for listening, and please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to be reminded of new episodes, and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Schmidt Associates and at Schmidt_Associ on Twitter.